So when you'd gone down into the light machine shop, you were actually doing the job that you would, you know, be qualified to do. You'd be doing the turner's job that you'd been training to do since your time that you began at Fieldings. Can you just describe what a turner's job is?
A turner works on a lathe, and basically anything with a diameter, whether it's inside or outside. You're making round things, something like that. You know, you would put that in on a lathe, or that. We're looking at the scribing block now, seeing the various bits that would have been made on a lathe. But if it's round, it's made on a lathe. For the first, I think, now they used to work it so that your first year in the machine shop, when you were 17, you got double the time that was allowed on the job. So if it was an hour job, you were allowed two. Then when you were on the next year, you got time plus three quarters. So the year after, you'd get an hour and three quarters. And then the year after that, when you were 19, you got time and a half. So you if it was an hour, you'd have hour and a half. And then when you were 20, you were expected to get that job done in an hour, or whatever the time was stated. And you booked on the job and booked off it. There was an old guy called Stan. He used to do the book you on the job and book you off. Like the time clerk.
And he's the guy, you would have been working to a job card.
Yeah, yeah. You would get the job card, the steel and a drawing. And you would make that steel to the drawing. You would give it to the, I think it was a progress chaser, or you would leave it at the end of your lathe, and he'd come along and he'd pick it up and he'd take it on to wherever it was going next. If it was finished, it'd go in the stores, or if it was going on a milling machine or on a drill, but he would take it away. But then you would go in and you would like clock on the job and clock off it and get your next job. So you might see Reg Court and say, you know, what's next? What do you want next? So we give you your next job.
So it was from Reg Court that you got the job cards, or Stan?
No, Stan was only the time clerk. He would book you on the job and he would book you off it. But Reg Court decided what I was going to do. And if I was going to do a phase test, that would be between Barry Degg and Reg Court. They would say, well, can he do it Tuesday? You know, if we were busy, or next week or whenever. But, you know, sooner or later I'd get this phase test, and that would be the one they marked.
So would you have to go up to Reg's, like a foreman's office, to get the job card, or was he generally sort of around the shop floor a bit more?
No, he's generally floating about. He was more hands-on bloke, Reg. He was a really good machinist. And I heard some tales that I don't think I could make some of the things. They could have been exaggerating, I don't know. But from what I was told, you know, he was a really good turner.
Can you tell me some of those stories that you heard about Reg?
Apparently he could make a pair of candlesticks freehand, and they would look identical. Now, like I said, I never saw any. He wasn't on a lathe as such. He would come and help you out if you were stuck, or if something was going wrong, and you'd say, can you have a look, please? But Reg was a funny old character. One of the sayings was, man and machine together are a pair. Part there, nothing, or words to that effect.
There was I remember when we were talking last time, you were saying that Reg had another saying about Was it speed and accuracy?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is one I'll never forget as well. Speed and accuracy equal efficiency. So, you know, you've got to do it quick and you've got to do it right. And you'll get it done on time.
Did he have a lot of these sayings? Was he that kind of guy?
He was quite repetitive. Yeah, I mean a lot of these sayings I heard so many times that they're etched into my head. You know, I'll never forget them. I mean, some of them were quite rude, but we got them written down, I think. I'll always remember that bloke. You know, and I can shut my eyes and I can picture him, you know, looking at me and shaking his head.
How old would he have been when you were there?
Oh dear, he must have been in his 60s then. So, and I'm going back 35 years. He was a heavy smoker as well, so I would be very surprised if he was still with us. But I think he lived in Matson. I'm not sure. I didn't really get to know him all that well. You know, he was the foreman, and like I say, he was quite a way above me. So,
did you get to know the other blokes that you worked with in the light machine shop?
Yeah, there were some right characters there. I mean, Freddie Perkins, he was on an Aikigo lathe as well, and he'd be coming up, and he'd be telling me stories all afternoon. Or, I mean, there was Ginger Cole, who used to have the shop, and if you wanted a Mars bar or a bag of crisps, you'd go and see him, and he'd have a dirty, great big cupboard, and he'd open it up and sell you whatever you wanted, within reason. But there was an old guy called Nobby as well. He was on the lathe, but he was a little bit more insular than Freddie Perkins. Freddie was a chatterbox. There was another old guy called Jim. He was on a big Dean Smith and Grace. I say big, not big by fielding standards, but probably big by in engineering. But that was a light machine shop lathe. So,
how many blokes would you have been working with then in the light machine shop?
In the light machine shop, there was a couple of guys on the drill. They had quite a few capstans as well. There was an old guy called Rowley, and he used to call himself the Whistler. And I'll never know why, because he never used to whistle. But he was from Yorkshire. And he could tell you some stories. He Reg Court would have to come and prize you away from him. But I mean, some of the things that they used to do on his capstan, he used to put the hexagons in cap screws, and I've never seen that done since. And like I say, it's all I've ever done, engineering, machining. But he used to keep us amused for hours, chatting away, telling his tales. There was another guy on the drill, Phil Stone his name was, and he looked a bit like Captain Caveman. And I think he would have been in his early 30s at the time. And whether he was having like an early midlife crisis, I don't know, but he wanted to knock about with the apprentices. We did a raft race down at Lidbrook, and Ross to Lidbrook, I think, or might be the other way around. And he came down with us. I think there was three apprentices and this Phil Stone. And we made this raft at Fieldings. And it was all drums lashed together. And we started off, and you got all these professional rafts, and, you know, that would really cut through the water. And you've got the Fielding and Platt Apprentice Association drifting. I think we made the first checkpoint, and it was like getting dark, so they took us out the water. But we had a few cans of beer on board, and we didn't really mind. We just had a leisurely amble down the River Wye. But he was a, I used to see him as well at ICI Clubhouse. And but there are some real characters there. There really was.
I've never heard that story about the river raft racing, making it at Fielding. So that was when you were in the apprentice school then?
Yeah. When the five of us started in 77, I don't think they had apprentices for possibly 4 or 5 years. So I think when we were about 18, they decided they were going to start an apprentice association, just a little club. So that was one of the things we did. We entered in this raft race, and like I say, Phil Sloan got in on it. I haven't got a clue, but the other thing we did, we did a disco at the New County, and my job was to get the raffle prizes. So I think I called in the newsagent in Brockworth on the way into town, and I got half a dozen bottles of whiskey and gin and all sorts. I think we sold about 10 tickets. So anyone that went in this raffle was guaranteed a prize, you know, 50p for a bottle of whiskey or a bottle of gin. But it didn't make a profit, that one. So we didn't do any more of them. But it didn't really matter. It was an experience.
And how many people would be coming to these Apprentice Association events?
Well, the raft race, it was only like, I think it was a carload from us. One of them was Nigel Allen. He was a year younger than me, but I think he had a car when he was 17. So he drove us down there. How the raft got down there, I haven't got a clue. I can't remember. I think that may have been Bill Stone. Possibly, that's the only way I can think of. But Nigel Allen drove us down there and drove us back. But look, I think there was about 10 of us in the Apprentice Association at the time. There was like our year and the year younger. But we'd get some of the older guys in, and they'd help us out on the raft race or whatever. But it was really good. It was.
So Chris Cruz and Marcus Jelfs, did they help you on make this raft then, or was that extra time that you had to spend on it in the apprentice school?
No, I think that was when we were working down on the machine shop. When we actually made the raft, I can't remember. I'm not sure if Kevin, is it Kevin? Tough. We used to call him Tough. I think his dad was Welsh, but we used to call him Taff. I've got a feeling Taff may have welded it up or knocked it up or lashed it up or whatever. But like I say, it wasn't built for speed. I think it was 4 oil drums and on a pallet. And that was it. So, like I say, we just had an amble down with a couple of cans of beer, and we didn't care who won.